The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you are staying healthy by visiting all the great information we have available at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. To listen to any of The Natural Nurse shows, you can always go to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Eugene Zamperone has been my partner many years. And we have written several books, including Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Guide, Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Guide, The Natural Medicine Chest, Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, and many others. So you can check that out at the website, naturalnurse.com, or you can always get in touch with us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And also, we answer consumer questions at Nature's Answer, so you can get us there at naturesanswer.com. Today, we have as our guest Tim Scher. And we're going to be talking also about his book, which is called Get Out of Your Way. That's right, Get Out of Your Own Way. And Tim focuses on issues in human behavior, communication, and peak performance, and how self-sabotage can interfere with growth in these areas. And in his new book, he reveals how people are unconsciously making their lives more difficult and stressful, and what they can do to instantly take control. So we're going to bring him on board. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you so much, Ellen. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Now, I did visit your website at timshore.com, and you have lots of information there as well. Now, what got you interested in this entire topic of personal growth?
Well, it all started when I was 14 years old. My dad was an electrician at U.S. Steel in northern Indiana, and he was working on an electrical box, and he was in there with his flashlight and a screwdriver, and the box was not tagged correctly, so while he was in there, somebody turned it on, and it exploded, and he was burned very severely on 40% of his body, and I didn't see my dad again for 4 months, and my mom disappeared because she was at the Loyola Burn Unit with him, and my whole life had turned upside down. And so, I ended up having a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, a lot of fear, a lot of stress. And I wanted to learn how to feel more secure and how to overcome trauma and how to feel good about myself and be able to accomplish my own goals instead of constantly being scared all the time. And so I got into psychology and then I got into other peak performance skills like hypnosis and neurolinguistic programming. I got into the hypnosis because it was such a great tool for pain management because of my father. And so I just kind of started this journey of learning about how to feel good and how to use your mind to improve your life instead of make it worse. And 23 years later, I've worked with tens of thousands of people from all over the world, and I'm kind of a coach's coach. I'm the guy that other coaches and therapists go to for help because I've learned how to recognize the way that we sabotage ourselves and quickly turn it around.
So that's a personal story. So many people do create change in their life once they face adversity.
Sometimes it looks like no pain, no gain. That's right. Well, if you run from it, that's where your opportunity is. But because of the culture that we live in America and because of how we are, our lives are structured these days, if we feel any little ounce of discomfort, we immediately start self-medicating. We try to distract ourselves. We'll go eat something. We'll drink something. We'll smoke something. We'll take something because we don't want to feel that pain. We want that instant pleasure. And that instant pleasure is what's robbing us from the actual joy and security that we seek.
Now, What is some of the what is really self-sabotage? I mean, most people don't think they do it, but when you listen to their internal conversation, or if they take the time to listen to it, they often will find that it's true.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can see self-sabotage really easy in anybody that knows what to do to make their lives better, but they just don't do it. So self-sabotage is when you are communicating with yourself in a way that causes you to feel stressed or frustrated or overwhelmed. And self-sabotage happens when you are using your mind to make achieving goals harder than instead of easier. So, you know, I like to teach what I call emotional mastery, which is how to use these tools that God gave us to our advantage. We have this amazing brain, and your brain's like a computer, and it's running all these great programs, but it's also running some programs that are not so great. And the only problem is that you don't have the owner's manual. So you have all this wonderful, all these wonderful tools, but you have no idea how to use them. And after a week or two, we want to just kind of smash the darn computer because it keeps freezing up on us. So if you had somebody, I'm kind of like the Geek Squad for your mind. So if you had somebody that could come in and show you the shortcuts so that you could turn stress into success, you could learn how to instantly get rid of cravings using your mind, or you could learn how to get yourself motivated and want to follow through, then it's amazing what can happen for you in your life. But if you don't understand it, it just feels frustrating and difficult.
Well, one of the things I tell people to do is right when they're falling asleep to pay attention to the self-talk that's going on. Because sometimes that's when all that internal verbiage about worry and anxiety really comes out to where you can hear it when it's quiet, you know, before you go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny because really, you know, our minds are never quiet. You know, I wrote a book called The Power of Optimism, and it was all about positive thinking. And after working with so many people, I think that the next book I write on, you know, what to say to yourself is just going to be a book full of empty pages. If you could just get it quiet in your mind, and I'll give you a quick little tip for how to do that, where you don't have to meditate for 20 years. But if you can get yourself to be quiet inside and go within and know that everything's going to be okay, then, you know, half your stress is going to end right there. But because of the worrying and the fear and all the stuff that we run through our mind at the end of the night, it's half the reason why so many people have insomnia. So that's really good advice that you give. And then, all right, so the next step is, now what do you do when your mind is going 100 miles an hour and you can't stop it? Well, this is something you could do. One thing you can do is look up, where you're just looking up. Now, if you're laying down in bed, you're going to kind of look towards your the bedpost or the headboard. Because when you look up, it quiets that inner chatter. It quiets that voice inside of your mind. And I noticed that from working with a lot of people. I used to work in the hospitals, in the psych hospitals, inpatient, outpatient. I worked with a lot of people who had depression. And I noticed that depressed people were always staring down. In fact, I never met one depressed person that was looking up. And so I started asking clients, you know, look up, and you can try this now, unless, of course, anybody's driving, then don't do this, but just look up, stare at the ceiling, and try and get upset about anything. Try to get stressed out while you're looking up.
That's great information. I think I remember taking an NLP course where they talked about things like that. You know, that's a very interesting thing, so you can just practice that yourself. And you mean if you were laying in bed, just look up with your eyes, or if you're standing, do you pick your head up to look up, or just lift your eyes to the ceiling?
You can just lift your eyes to the ceiling, because when you're right, with NLP, what they say is that when you look down, it causes you to access, you go auditory digital, which means that you start talking to yourself, and that's when you feel your feelings when you look down. But when you look up, for whatever reason, you go visual, and it causes you to get quiet in your mind. And I don't know, you know, some people say you're looking down at the ground, there's no options. You look up, the sky's the limit. You know, look up to heaven or look up to God, look up to the resources available to you, and suddenly you realize that you're just fine. It's just that deep down driving fear inside of all of us that somehow in some way I'm not enough and I'm going to get hurt because of it. And because of that deep down belief, that deep down fear, comes all the other worries, all the other negative thoughts that come to mind. And positive thinking is just not enough, because it's like trying to cut the top off of a weed. If you don't get to the root system, to those deep down beliefs, I call it the BS inside of you, your belief systems, if you don't get to the foundation and change it there, then it's always going to be a struggle for you.
That's great information. Now, besides, you know, the personal demons that people are always struggling with, How have you found when people go to timshur.com and work with you in your many workshops and lectures that you give all over the country? What about all the changes that are going on right now, you know, in the government and in the world and the big disaster events? Is that even increasing feelings of anxiety?
Well, sure it is. Ever since 9/11, the world has been different, and people are always are more anxious and more stressed than ever before. And so we have to remember that, that Rome fell from the inside out. It didn't fall from terrorism. Rome fell from the greed and the fear that was happening inside, where the people were tearing themselves apart. And if you look at America right now, if America was a person, he'd be fat, broke, stressed out, and divorced. And we have to change this. And, you know, everybody wants to know what's happening in the White House. I want to know what's happening in your house, what's happening in our house. We have to take personal responsibility. And, Ellen, the major thing is people, even if they know they're making their lives worse, they don't know what to do to change it. They don't know what to do to fix it. And that's where I come in. You know, I have some simple things that I've noticed after sitting down with so many people. There are certain things that, that you can say to yourself and that you can do with your mind and your body that will help you feel calm and secure, that will help you achieve goals faster and easier. And there are other things that if you do them, they are going to keep you from your goals forever. They're going to cause you more stress and pain.
And I know you talk about some of those things in detail in your book, Get Out of Your Way, which is a really good thing to pick up, and then you can follow through some of these things for yourself. Now, you know, what about breaking bad habits?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, cigarette smoking, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's several sabotages that we have, you know, that I can share with you right off the bat. You know, sabotage number one is expecting to fail right from the start. Most of the time, people expect that it isn't going to work out, kind of like a New Year's resolution. When people set New Year's resolutions, they're usually setting the ones from the year before, and they don't really think it's going to happen. And if you want to know, you can take my little self-sabotage quiz. You know, you can always find out if somebody is, if they think they're going to fail right from the start, because they will say things like this. Well, I hope it works. We'll see what happens. I got my fingers crossed. We'll give it a try. My most successful clients always consistently say, I'm going to make this happen. I don't know how, but I'm going to make it happen. I just need the right tools and the right support, or I need a different kind of approach. But they, in their mind, expect to win, and what you expect to have happen is usually what shows up in your life.
Well, let's review that little self-sabotage quiz. Maybe we can, it's, you know, a couple of the questions we can just ask people on air, and they'll see how they feel about it.
Right. So one thing you can ask yourself is, am I focusing on what I want or focusing on what I'm afraid of? And then you can rate it with, you know, I focus on what I want 100% of the time, 50% of the time, none of the time. And that's a biggie. People will come into my office and they'll tell me all the things that they don't want, all the things that they're afraid of, all the things they're trying to get away from. Well, your mind is kind of like has a genie inside of it, and it listens to whatever words you use the most, and then figures that must be what you want, so it tries to create that. So if you know, I come to you, Ellen, and I say, Ellen, I just got to stop procrastinating. If you could help me stop procrastinating, I'm always putting things off. I can't get anything done. I'm going out of my mind. I have to stop procrastinating. Can you help me? Now, what is the one word that my mind kept hearing over and over? Procrastinating. So if you, it's kind of like I'm a nurse and I walk up to you with a needle and I say, honey, you're not going to feel any pain. What are they going to, what's the one word they hear? Pain.
Yeah, ouch. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, so that's right. So you have to say it the way you want it. Instead of saying, I got to stop procrastinating, what you focus on instead is, I need to feel more motivated. I need to follow through and get things done and feel more motivated. Now your mind is hearing motivated, get things done. And because your mind starts to hear that, it will start to act upon it. So the first question in the quiz is, are you focusing on what you want or on what you're afraid of? See, I think the biggest sabotage that I've noticed more than all the others is this. When it's hard to get what you want, it's because you have accidentally, unconsciously, without realizing it, associated massive pleasure to the things that are keeping you stuck and massive pain to the things that would make your life better. So if you look at why everybody seems to be packing on the weight these days, or if you look at the research that says by the year 2020, 1 out of 3 people will have diabetes, you know, type 2 diabetes, the second highest, you know, preventable cause of death. The reason why is because we live in a society now where we associate massive pleasure to eating, massive pleasure to food. We have whole entire holidays around eating. When you're happy, you eat. When you're stressed, you eat. When you drop 30 pounds, you go have a hot fudge sundae, which is one of the reasons why people gain their weight back. Almost 80% of people that lose weight gain it back, and it's because they never change their mental program. You can keep using diets, but if you don't change your mental program, you just keep going back to the old habits. So that's why we focus on associating pleasure to what you want. And so for think of exercise, a lot of people don't exercise because they associate massive pain to it. So if you think in your mind, kind of like what you said in the beginning, no pain, no gain, then people are going to naturally move away from that because who wants pain? Who willingly wants pain? I'm trying to get out of pain. Why would I go put myself in more pain? We have it backwards, and we don't even realize that we're doing it. So we have to switch that around in your mind where you start to imagine the things that you want being more pleasurable. I had a client named Virginia, and Virginia came in and she said, I don't know why, you know, I can't stop eating all this food. I don't know why. And I said, well, tell me about it. And she says, you know, I'm from the South, so I just love fried chicken. Oh, the fried chicken. I could make fried chicken. It would melt in your mouth. And the dumplings, oh, honey, the dumplings are amazing. And, oh, you put some gravy next to it. And and I said, Virginia, tell me about broccoli and apples and grapes. And she goes, broccoli. Oh, God, broccoli, apples, grapes. And she talked about those foods like they were the most boring thing on the planet. So what she was doing was she was using self-hypnosis in a way, and she was conditioning herself to associate massive pleasure to those foods that were causing her obesity and massive pain to the healthy foods. She would make them boring and dull and unattractive. So, of course, she was motivated to eat the wrong stuff. We get into a bad pattern of trying to avoid pain by doing things that create more of it. Half the time, we don't even realize we're doing it.
That's so true. Well, we're going to just take a little break here, Tim, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the 5 ways people sabotage their diet, and you talked about some of them already, and you talk about willpower and positive thinking as not being the way to go, so we're going to talk about what kind of replacements you recommend at timshur.com, and also with your book, Get Out of Your Way. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse, Dr. Z.
Anywhere on the internet, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, your number one source for everything progressive.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists. Because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Don't miss miss out on Dr. Michio Kaku's weekly show, Explorations. Dr. Kaku is the only scientist with his own nationally syndicated radio show. Explorations is the program that explains complex physics with an accessible approach. So take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss topics ranging from space exploration to stem cell research.
Progressive Radio fans, I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and I do a program here on the network called The Green Front, as in reporting from the green front lines. That's where I've been for more than a decade, covering a beat that I think is fun, fascinating, fact-filled, and sometimes even kind of funny. Or not, when you consider the implications of our world-class denial here in America. The Green Front is an ostrich-free zone, though, where I select the most interesting and passionate eco-innovators out there and bring them to you live each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. So join me as we wake up America with the activists, authors, experts, and ordinary citizens out there making an extraordinary green difference.
The Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive thinkers.
Welcome back again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And one thing I'd like to tell you about is NOFA New York. NOFA is Northeast Organic Farmers Association, and the NOFA New York Long Island chapter is hosting a very big event, and that's coming up on Friday, April 15th, for those of you who listen to the show today or before that date. And that will be at the SUNY campus in Old Westbury. And where is your food coming from? Do you know? We talk about organic food here all the time on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We talk about the importance of saving farmland for ourselves and our prosperity, people coming after us and our prosperity, as a matter of fact. So I was thinking of progeny, but also prosperity, both of those reasons, as well as having local access to homegrown organic food. So if you're interested in that, you can come on out. And in addition, I will be one of the presenters there, and I will be representing Nature's Answer, and I will be giving an outside herb identification walk. We will go around and see what kind of plants grow in our area that we can just pick ourselves right outside and use for food and medicine. So if you'd like to come on board, you can get in touch with us or go ahead and contact the Long Island NOFA chapter. And today our guest is Tim Scher, and we are interviewing Tim. He's focusing on issues in human behavior, communication, and peak performance, and how self-sabotage can interfere with growth in these areas. Tim's new book, Get Out of Your Way, How to Eliminate Self-Sabotage and Win Your Life, reveals how people are consciously making their lives more difficult or unconsciously making their lives more difficult and stressful, and what they can consciously do to instantly take control. You can learn why willpower and positive thinking don't always work, and what most therapists are afraid to admit, and why many self-help programs often fail as well. So if you're self-sabotaging your relationships, money, or health, then you can listen to Tim's program today or visit his website at www.timscher.com. So thank you so much, and welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Tim.
Thank you, Ellen. And it sounds like that event that you're going to be at is wonderful. I would love for you to come and show me all the plants and ways that I can use natural medicine. That'd be great. In my own home yard. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, actually, every single plant that grows in people's yards, unless they spray it with toxic pesticides and herbicides, can usually be used for food and medicine.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, so we do that quite a bit, and that's something I've been working on since 1964.
Oh, man, well, you know what you're talking about then, huh?
Not a new concept. But, you know, let's go back into what we were talking about with you. About, you know, there's many areas that this can affect, you know, these problems with self-sabotage. Now, people might be going, you know, what about that? What about self-help groups and going to therapists and positive thinking? You're saying that's not the way. Why is that?
Well, it can be the way. It can be the way, you know, if there are certain criteria that's being met. For example, go to a therapist if, especially if you feel like, you know, you're on the verge of doing something harmful to yourself or others, go and find a therapist. Go and find somebody who's licensed and they know how to help you. One of the problems with therapy, though, and one of the reasons why I left that field is simply because they tend to focus, depending on the practitioner, they tend to focus a little too much on the past. And if you're always focused on the problems, then you're not focused on the solutions. You know, it doesn't matter always how you got to where you are. What matters is what you're doing now to keep it going. I remember watching an interview on Will Smith, the famous actor, and he said that in his family, it didn't matter where you came from. It didn't matter what's happened. All that matters is where you're headed. And I kind of think of it in that way as well. You know, another sabotage that I've noticed a lot is that people focus on where they're at or where they've been rather than where they're headed. So imagine that you're driving down in a car going 60 miles an hour on the freeway, staring at your lap. Yes, that's where you're at. But if you stare at that, then you're going to end up getting into an accident. And God forbid that you would be flying down the highway staring behind you. Because, yes, you've been in the past, and, yes, we understand that things might have happened that have shaped your past. But what's most important is how you can use your mind now to shape your future. That's why the windshield is so much bigger than the rearview mirror, because where you're headed is so much more important than where you've been.
Oh, that's a good analogy. I like that. Looking through the windshield is more important than looking in the rearview mirror. I always say that when people are spending time complaining about what they did, I always say, you know, even at work, like you talk about marriage and work, you know, even at work, let's say you developed a product that didn't do very well. Well, let's not put any more energy into thinking about that. Let's look to the future. And the same is true in a marriage. So many people get caught up in what didn't work out for them.
Right. Well, learn from it and then use that information to make a better choice next time. You know, the biggest problem that we have is that we don't take responsibility for ourselves. We get caught up in feeling like a victim, or we pretend that everything's okay when it isn't, or we go blaming everybody. You know, we go blaming, you know, our partner or the economy or our boss or whoever else, the neighbor, instead of looking at what is it that I'm really doing? What is it that's going on inside of me? And frankly, most people don't like that because it feels uncomfortable. But you have to learn how to feel comfortable being uncomfortable for just a little while. You know, it's like you're trying to get out of hell. You want to get to heaven. So now you're out of hell and you're in purgatory. But you have no idea what's going on. This is all new. It's all foreign. It feels very scary. You don't want to go back to hell, but, you know, at least it's warm, and we find ourselves right back again. If we could just learn how to feel a little bit more peaceful and a little bit more comfortable being uncomfortable for a little while, then you end up getting the reward. You end up getting what it is that you really want.
Well, so, in terms of dieting, you know, because that's something you brought up, and that catches a lot of people's attention, you know, because really that has a lot to do with self-sabotage. I don't think there's a person around that doesn't know what healthy eating should look like.
Right. Well, I've helped thousands of people lose weight using their mind, and because it's really most of weight loss or any other goal is changing the way that you think and changing the way you feel. People will say that they want to be healthy, but what does that really mean? You know, and so learning how to start to associate pleasure to the things that you really want that are going to make you feel healthy is where it's at. So let me give you some clear examples. Let me show you the difference between willpower versus your imagination. Now, I've been doing this for a long time with a lot of people. I can show you how to get rid of any craving in about 10 seconds. And, you know, I've worked with chocoholics and sugarholics that said, oh, I can't refuse it. If you put a brownie in front of me, it's going down. Okay, well, I can show you how to push that brownie away in 10 seconds using your mind. And so you want to play, Ellen?
Oh, sounds great.
Okay, good. All right, so is there anything in particular that you're trying to get away from, or should I just pick something out?
You know, with me, that's a difficult question because I really don't.
I know what I mean?
I love really healthy food. I love exercising. I just have a fabulous life, and I do not have any kind of particular issue that I'm struggling about with myself. Not that I haven't in the past. You know, through a lifetime of doing this kind of work, which really does help. So
we can
pick a hypothetical one. Let's say patients of mine, when they come in and they say, like about food, they like they want to eat, let's say, a bagel. Even though it makes them feel stuffed, even though they have a wheat allergy to it, and they feel really tired after eating it. So that would be a good example.
Okay, so you take that bagel and you take a bite out of it and imagine that you're chewing up that bagel. Chew it up real good. Don't swallow it. Just chew it up real good. And then spit it back out into your hand. Okay, and then have them eat it again. And what will happen is when they imagine that mess that they just spit out and they look at it, they'll go, no, I don't want to. You can do the same thing with a brownie. Imagine chewing up a brownie, spit it back out, and then if it's so good, eat it again. And most people will be like, ew, that's disgusting. Same thing with a cigarette. If you got to have a cigarette so bad, break one up in a glass of water, stir it up real good, and then just sip it on down. People go, ew, because you're changing the way that they're experiencing it. Now, if people say, well, I'd eat that spit-up brownie anyway, good. Chew it up, spit it out in a stranger's hand, and eat it out of theirs again. And it causes you to go, ugh, because you're using your imagination in a different way. So, you know, if we had someone that was actually doing that, it would be very dramatic. They would be like, oh, my gosh, that's gross. And there would be zero willpower. There would be, you know, no internal debate, no arguing with themselves. They're trying to talk themselves out of the brownie or the bagel. They would simply go, no thanks, I don't want it, not now. Now, does it mean that they're never going to eat a brownie or a bagel again? Not necessarily, no. But it did show them how to use a simple technique that caused them to immediately feel stronger and more in control. You erase their desire for that food in that moment. And the best news is they know how to do it so they can do it again in the future.
That is an excellent tip, Tim. I never heard that before, and I love learning new things. You know, if you listen to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, there is so many shows where you can get tips, new tips that perhaps you never even thought about before. But that is a brand new one to me. And you know what? It's totally free. It's something that people can do completely by themselves. They don't have to save up millions of dollars and pay anybody.
Right.
And that tip I am going to put into my teaching protocol when I'm working with people who would like to create healthy change in their life.
That
That's
is wonderful.
Great.
Yes, that is great, and it will really help them. And you just be really be dramatic with it, and then watch because their faces scrunch up and like, oh, you know, gross. And then you're like, that's right. You know, I've had people where I was chasing them on stage with chocolate chip cookies, and they were like, get it away, get it away. And these were self-professed, you know, chocoholics. So your imagination is incredibly powerful, and that's just one little technique. There's dozens of them in the Get Out of Your Way book and you know, all the different videos I put out there and articles because, you know, this is something that we need to know about. And it's not really being talked about. We're given the same kind of advice, and it's really good advice. But the problem is you can teach people what to do, and you can give them the best advice, but if they don't take it, it doesn't matter. And so my whole thing for the last 10 years is how do you get people to follow through? How do you get people to act on the information? And what I figured out is that, you know, they're not acting on the information because of how they're communicating with themselves. So we're associating, you know, pain and difficulty to what we want. Let me give you another example. Another self-sabotage is focusing on all the steps it's going to take to get what you want instead of focusing on the outcome. So if you imagine yourself, I had a woman came in and she said, I just cannot exercise. I just can't get myself to do it. You know, and I said, well, what do you imagine? And she says, well, I imagine myself on a treadmill and I'm exhausted and now I'm all sweaty and now I need to take a shower and I got to pick my kid up from school and I don't have any time and I'm all tired now and I'm gross. I'm like, wow, I would totally be motivated. You know, it was no surprise why she couldn't get on a treadmill when she imagined it so awful. I said, what would happen if you closed your eyes and opened your eyes and you were suddenly 20 pounds thinner? How would you feel? And she said,
that would make it easy.
Yeah, she said, I'd feel awesome. I'd be like, woo, that'd be great. Okay, and I said, good. Now, I didn't ask you to imagine all that it's going to take to drop those 20 pounds. I just had you imagine the outcome you wanted. And notice how the feelings kicked in. See, there was a popular movie, Ellen, called The Secret. I'm sure you know about it.
Yeah.
And The Secret said that, you know, what you think about comes about and what you focus on comes to you. And that's not entirely accurate. The reason why you focus on what you want is for two reasons. One, so your mind knows what to create, what direction to go in. And then two, because when you say things in a more positive way, when you're focusing on what you want and when you sell it to yourself in a way that makes you want to buy it, okay, it creates the feelings that cause you to take action. So if you're focusing on, instead of being on the treadmill, you imagine that you just finished, you feel sparkly, you have energy, you feel totally proud of yourself because you accomplished the goal. You did it for just a few minutes, but it still worked. And you're sitting on the couch that night and your body's still burning fat. And how does that feel? And people are like, well, I like that. That feels good. Now you're creating the feelings inside that cause you to take action and follow through. So the reason why you have positive thinking is to point you in the right direction and to create the feelings that will cause you to take action, because that's where it's at.
You know, I agree with you about The Secret. When I watched it, I felt it was deficient in getting across at least two very major concepts. And one was the fact that they seem to relate a positive outcome with massive financial wealth, which I think is only one aspect of a positive life, not what you need to actually feel accomplished or full or peaceful. And that seemed to be their focus, like owning an island and a Mercedes. And then the other thing was they did not seem to focus on the piece of having to work, you know, have a plan and take action steps. They seem to just talking about the positive thinking and the visualization, and then it's just going to happen.
Yes. Yep, I totally agree. Yeah, they did a good job of visually putting out the first part of it. For that, I think they did a really great job. And, you know, videos like that are always tweaking on people's fear and greed. So you're always going to see that, you know, making lots of money. Although, trying to make lots of money is usually what makes people miserable more than anything else, in my opinion. You know, when you go to other countries and you see people that have nothing, I remember someone talking about a trip that he went to Cuba. And he was in the taxi, and he saw that everybody was smiling, and there was people singing in the streets, and waitresses were flirting with their customers, and everybody seemed joyful. And he asked the taxi driver, he says, what's going on here? And he says, well, we're all poor. We don't have anything. We don't have any money to buy anything, so we realize that our riches and our value is going to come through our relationships and how we connect with other people. And they were thrilled. You go to India, and you see the people there, they have nothing. And yet they're happy, they're smiling, they're giggling, you know. And so then you come to America, the richest country in the world, and we're stressed out and we're frustrated and we're complaining about, you know, the guy who cut us off or the coffee's too hot or, you know, this and that. And, you know, so we have it really backwards. And so
Did you say you're from? I didn't think that went on. Where were you, Indiana or somewhere? I've been
only
New York.
Oh, no, it's everywhere. And so, yeah, and I'm in Indianapolis, right? So in the Midwest where people are more relaxed and at ease. And, you know, I kind of grew up in the middle. On one side of me was the cornfields, and the other side of me was the skyscrapers of Chicago. And so, you know, I've worked with every kind of person, from every kind of situation, from homeless people and people that were in psychiatric hospitals to multimillionaires and CEOs and big companies and everyone in between, kids and soccer moms. And I work with everybody on everything, you know, and stuff you don't even want to imagine. And I've learned that people can be very resourceful. People can overcome all kinds of situations, and no matter what you've been through in the past, there is a way to use your mind to overcome it and to make your life better. But you have to go in and get the tools. You gotta understand how to communicate with yourself in a different way. Because the worst thing that I hear from people, Ellen, is they say, oh, I've tried everything. First, that's impossible to try everything. Second, you know, especially with dieters, they say, I've tried everything, when actually you've tried the same approach disguised differently. It's the same approach disguised differently. So if you want a different approach, you gotta take a different angle.
And also recognizing who you really are. Like in your book, Get Out of Your Way, in chapter 10, you talk about why being perfect is boring and being yourself is vital. Because then I find, like if I'm counseling students about what path they should take in terms of careers, I always just ask them, what do you love to do?
Yeah.
Having nothing to do with perhaps, you know, a connection to a financial outcome. But many people who do delve deeply into what they love wind up being able to support themselves and focusing on that at the same time instead of constantly fighting with themselves.
Well, what a beautiful way to teach. And I'm so thrilled that you teach that way because that's what's really most important. And, you know, so good for you. And it's so needed. And a lot of people aren't being told that. They're like, they haven't even thought of it that way. I bet some of your students just look at you like they're puzzled. Like, I have no idea what I like.
Right, like I like football. I go, okay, so how about, you know, what if you became a clothes designer and designed football jerseys or a scientist that did studies on impact, you know, all kinds of things. Let's say a guy who loves football but really is too small to ever think he could realistically be a professional football player. But there's so
sure.
many other things he could do and surround himself in the language of that sport as he even gets older.
Yep, absolutely. You know, and it's about thinking outside the box. Another common self-sabotage is trying to solve everything on your own. But nobody is an island. You know, it takes other people to give you ideas and feedback. So, you know, as successful as I've been at helping and coaching other people, I have a coach, and I've had him for 6 years, and he's tremendous because he helps me so much. When I met him, he said, Tim, you can't see the label when you're in the bottle. You know, you can't be objective with yourself. And he's so right. So I have somebody in my life that when I start running my patterns, my self-sabotage, that he recognizes that and he brings me back. And so if you can find a mentor or a coach, if you can go to classes and workshops, if you can read these books and go to the library and get audiobooks and, you know, tune in and continue to listen to wonderful shows like this one, Ellen. You know, that's what's going to give people the support that they need. It's really one of the biggest secrets of success is to have an environment around you that supports you, that gives you real feedback, that doesn't just, you know, give you validation when you're acting out like, you know, our girlfriends or buddies will do. You know, we don't need that kind of reinforcement or support. Sometimes it's nice, but usually
well, even
we need
in parenting,
the truth.
Even
oh,
in parenting.
Gosh, yeah.
That's a very good point, Tim, about positive reinforcement. I think that really works because I learned that concept many years ago. My own children are in their mid-30s, but when they were infants, I learned that concept because so many parents also will only go over and give their children any kind of attention if they do something wrong.
Right.
So they'll just let them go about their business if everything's okay, and then they run over when there's a negative issue. So once I learned that, I took it upon myself to notice that when my child was doing something excellent and go over and interact with them at that point and tell them how wonderful they were. So the emphasis of our interaction was more wonderful things. And I have to say they both grew up to be fabulous people. But I really think that parents and also in relationships that people more or less ignore everything until there's a bad problem instead of taking proactive action when everything is excellent.
Yes, catch your kids doing things right. If the only time you give your kid attention is when he's acting out or she's acting out, they're just going to keep acting out because they want your attention. And so another thing to focus on, too, is going back to that sabotage of saying what you want instead of what you don't. So if I tell my 3-year-old little Aiden, I say, Aiden, don't throw that toy, what do you think he's going to do?
Exactly.
You know, he's throwing that toy because the human mind doesn't understand don't or not or try. If I say don't think of an elephant pops into mind. Okay, so, you know, what you have to do when you're working with your children is two things. One, tell them what you want, which is put the toy over here or over there, you choose. That way you put him in a double bind, so he has to put it one way or another, but he feels like he has some choice in the matter. The second thing you do is realize that you are their parent, not their friend. The thing that goes wrong is that parents are stressed out, frustrated, and they want to be liked by their children. Because of our own, you know, the biggest disease we have on the planet is insecurity. And so You know, the problem is that we're trying to be liked and trying to be validated instead of setting boundaries with our kids. And so if you can learn to deal with their, you know, I hate you and they're acting out and stuff like that, and you can still set the boundaries and still be clear on the consequences and still follow up every time, those kids will love you for it, because they feel safe when you set boundaries. When I worked with the kids that had been kicked out of school and the kids in gangs, I remember many of them telling me, they said, I just wish my parents would have given me some more boundaries. You know, I wish they would have given me some rules. They never did anything. I could do whatever I want. I felt like they didn't care at all. So setting those boundaries and feeling good about yourself and knowing that you're doing the right thing even when it's hard is going to be what helps you to create healthier, happier kids for sure.
Well, you talked also about, let's say, the programs, like the 12-step programs. Now, I have found that they do help a lot of people. So what do you think some of the positive or, you know, not so positive aspects of those are?
Well, you know, there's pros and cons of everything. So some 12-step programs have saved, you know, a lot of lives. They really help people. And so that can be great. But if you look at the relapse rate, it's really high. It's like 85%, 80%. I mean, it's really high where people go back. Or they get off alcohol, for example, and then they kill themselves with cigarettes and caffeine. So, you know, we have to do the mental part of it, again, where instead of just helping people to change their lives temporarily, we got to show them how to change it long term. So, for example, you know, if you are always saving somebody from drowning, when you're not there, they end up drowning because they never learned to save themselves. So if we can teach people this emotional mastery, the tools and the strategies that we're both teaching, you know, if we can show people how to communicate with themselves in a way that updates their beliefs so that they believe who they really are, you know, and they have a stronger belief about who they are, and we teach them how to use their mind to prepare them instead of scare them, and we show people how to go within so they don't ever have to go without, that is going to be what ends up saving that person and perhaps even the whole world. So this emotional mastery isn't something that's a luxury. It's something that's a necessity, and it's something that we need right now. And we're all ganging together and doing our part to try to educate as many people as we can. And the best way to do it is be the change in your life and then inspire others by example. Be the light in the darker room, and then when other people start asking you, what are you doing, then you can start to let them know. I'm changing the way that I look at things. I'm associating pleasure and pain in the right way. I've learned how to use my imagination to my advantage. I listen to Dr. Ellen's show all the time. And I went out and I bought Tim's book, Get Out of Your Way. And, you know, I used these tools and I applied them and my life got better.
Yeah, you have to take some steps, absolutely. And the thing, what's so exciting about what you're sharing with the listeners is that you can create change. So if there's something you don't like, you don't want to give up on yourself either.
No, you just change it around. And it doesn't matter what's going on too much in your environment. What happens most is, or what matters most is what happens in your mind, in your inner environment. I work with people that have been through every kind of tragedy you can imagine, violence and traumas and all kinds of horrible things. And yet what matters most is how they perceive it, the meaning that they give it, how they interpret it in their mind, what they do. Do they play a particular painful memory over in their mind like a loop just over and over, causing them to always feel riddled with anxiety? Or have they learned to shift it and change it and disconnect from the feelings? You still remember the things that have happened and you keep the wisdom from it because you've earned that so that it doesn't happen in the future. However, you escape from the emotional ties that bind you to that, so that you can feel free again, so you can rebuild your life in a better way, so it can make you stronger.
Well, and, we're going to be ending soon, but I do want you to address this. What about money? Because we talked about parenting, we talked a little bit about marriage, we talked about looking at the self, but, you know, people have very strange relationships to money. What are some of the ways to avoid money sabotage?
Well, the first thing you do is stop feeling like you always need more money. Because when you chase somebody, what do they typically do? They run away. So if you're chasing money, it will always seem to elude you. When you're chasing respect, you never seem to get it, or when you're demanding it. So So one of the things you want to start to do in your mind is decide that you are going to be okay no matter what. When you no longer need it, it will be there. And I know it sounds weird, but when you no longer need it, it will be there. You know, when I, now that it, you know, I, there were times where I was so broke, you know, I made clothes out of ramen noodles. You know, I got hungry, I didn't eat a sleeve. I mean, I had no money and, you know, and no one was around. And now I have some money. And all of a sudden, now that I have money, everybody wants to take me out for dinner. I'm like, well, where were you, you know, when I was broke? So when you don't need it, when you have the mindset that you're just fine already, when you don't need it, then opportunities seem to show up. But if you feel like you're always chasing it, where you never have enough and you're always under pressure, then you just attract more situations that cause pressure. You know, worrying about bills all night long has never made it better. It only makes you feel worse. And then if there is an opportunity to solve your problem, you won't see it because you're stressed out, you're shut down, you're exhausted, or you'll choke. You know, so people go to an interview, they finally are going to get an interview for a job, and they choke, they blow it because they put too much pressure on themselves. They made it about themselves instead of how they could serve the employer. And so if you can learn how to look at money as a good thing, as an energy, a way of improving your life and the lives of those around you, without getting caught up in all that propaganda of having to have so much of it and having to buy all this stuff and do all these things, then it can make your life so much better.
Just by changing your attitude. Well, I want to thank you so much for all those great insights. I'm going to have all my patients bring their offending foods and spit them out and read. That is just a great tip, as well as lots of wonderful information that you shared with us today. I want to tell our listeners that they can hear the show again right here on Progressive Radio Network at the Natural Nurse Archive, or visit Tim at www.timshurr.com, or get in touch at naturalnurse.com. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.